Good morning, and it's very, very good to be here at Knapp Hill. That's right, isn't it? I'm somewhere different every week. One of my colleagues said, Howard, your preaching is all over the place. But I'm very glad to be here. I notice you're 75. You're looking very well on it. So I'm glad to come from the high living and low thinking of Winchester to the clear living and the good thinking of Knapp Hill and Woking. I kind of go past here every day on the 705 from Winchester into Waterloo. We now have so many people getting on Winchester that you have to stand when you get on in Woking, but it's good for you. The passages that we have before us in Haggai and Luke, believe me, I didn't choose them deliberately to be awkward. They just happened to be in the lectionary, but it seemed to me that they say some quite interesting things for us. And you could receive the passage from Haggai as a kind of prophecy. You could. I will fill this house with splendour, says the Lord. The latter splendour of this house shall be greater than the former, says the Lord of hosts. What does it mean for a Methodist church to be a healthy place? Okay. Just think about it. Next one. Okay. What do you think should be found in a healthy church? What would you say, yes?
Love.
Love, okay. That's pretty good. Anything else?
Understanding?
Caring people?
Worship? Yeah, these are all good things.
Outreach?
Yeah, facing outwards.
Honour?
Yeah.
Trust.
Friendship. And friendship?
God.
Good gracious, this is a Methodist church we're talking about here. Okay. Let's just see what I come up with, and then you can add to it. Okay. Because we do have a problem. Because you know how many Methodists it takes to change a light bulb, don't you? Well, this is part of the problem. We're really confident about our past. You've got booklets and photographs about it out there. The great problem in thinking about the future for congregations, church councils, ministers, circuits is, it's like leaping into the dark, into the unknown. Okay. So, what is it we need in terms of a kind of framework for a healthy church? Here's the first. It's to do with pastoral care. You identified that in what you said. And actually, why? Because it is from the heart of God to care for all that is. It is not just a notion that we find in the constitutional practice and discipline of the Methodist Church, though everyone should read it, especially if you suffer from insomnia. But it is actually something that comes from the very nature and heart of God to reach out to his people. And therefore, it is part of what becomes the people of God in every age. Moreover, there's this stuff about fellowship, koinonia, that are the very heart of what we're about. Now, you can go to some churches where moving from the vestry to the sanctuary is like climbing into the refrigerator. Okay? And I'm not talking about the air temperature. I'm talking about the interaction between people and the way people deal with one another. You can tell, as a preacher, coming into a place whether people are happy to be there, whether people care for one another, whether they're looking out for one another. And that care, that koinonia, is actually part of the covenant between people that comes from God. It ought not just to be a kind of vaporous idea. It needs to have tangible expression. It needs to be visible. I can remember many years ago when I was a minister in Croydon, where this lady came and she said, "I can't get over this church." I said, "What do you mean?" She said, "I can tell that people care for one another." And she'd just been coming 2 or 3 weeks. And she was astonished that should be so in a group of people, a diverse group of all ages and different backgrounds and different ethnicity. It needs to be tangible and visible so that people experience that care. Nobody is left out. Everybody is included. And of course, pastoral care, of course, is the sole responsibility of the ordained clergy, is it not? No, it's not, is it? Good job too. It's actually the whole responsibility of the people of God. And therefore, we all share in that responsibility. Pastoral care. Okay, look at this. Yeah, well, we all know people like that. Okay. Pastoral care and, you said, outreach. Reaching out into the community. A care for what in the authorised version of the Bible is called the sojourner. Of course, next year it's the 400th anniversary of the King James version of the Bible. I guess you've got that. And there's a whole thing called Bible Fresh, which is being rolled out. And actually the Methodist Church, in a kind of curious way, is at the forefront of all of this, and you shall be hearing about it shortly. The sojourner, the person who's kind of a bit displaced, the person who's a bit different. Well, we're all a bit different, aren't we? We all have awkward sides to us, do we not? Come on, own up. And so we're all a bit like that. So it's about caring for all people. And actually that diaconia, that service to people, is what we as Christians are about. And believe you me, in the kind of environment, economic, political environment that we're in, the church is going to have to step up to the plate in many, many places. Because the kind of provision that we become used to is going to disappear. It is going to disappear. So community involvement, community care is going to be really important. And empathising with our community, understanding our community, serving our community, looking for the needs of people. It's quite interesting. I've never been to Knaphill before, so... you could say that I circled round it. That wasn't entirely because I was lost, but it did have something to do with it. This sense, it seems to me, of there's seems to geographically
the possibility of a sense of community here. Would that be the case? And therefore the opportunity to care for people. And look at that, community involvement. Okay. If the Christian gospel is about taking the water of life, if Jesus is the water of life, then how do we share that with people? How do we use it to wash people's hands, to give them to drink? What are the ways in which we do that in this community? Okay. Pastoral care, community involvement, and justice. It's really interesting that when you get into the prophets, Amos, Micah, and so forth, that actually justice is a key element of what they're all about. Let justice roll down the mountains like waters, and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream. That importance of justice in the life of the church. And one of the interesting things, I was just reading from one of your booklets out there, the message of the King to the Uniting Conference of the Methodist Church in 1932. I'm glad to tell you I wasn't there. When I was principal of Cliff, they thought I'd been ordained by John Wesley, I'm sure. But the King, in writing, speaks about the zeal that Methodists have always had for community involvement and for justice. He doesn't use that word. But the sense of involvement in people and caring for people. Here it is. We now speak of justice in relation to the care of creation. And the Methodist Church, along with the URC and the Baptists, produced a brilliant booklet last year about hope for God's world. And looking at the biblical texts and the way that we should deal with creation. It's amazing how things have changed. I was thinking about this on the train. I said to you, haven't I? I catch the 7:05 train from Winchester every day up to Waterloo. Fancy my old age, I become a commuter. I tell you, if I do it 5 days a week, I'm jiggered. I catch that train, and I was thinking, how, when I used to catch the train from Chesterfield down to London almost every week when I was at Cliff, people smoking? You don't go in smoke-filled carriages anymore, do we? You know? The way that we deal with leaded fuel, unleaded. The changes that there have been are enormous in relation to the way we deal with the care of creation. But there's so much more to do. We just need to wind back a bit, actually. Just come back. And again. Because issues to do with fair trade are crucial. And wanted to seek peace with justice. The Methodist Church this year, controversially, had a piece about Palestine and the rights of the people in Palestine, and the way that we should deal with that issue in the Middle East. That became highly controversial, but fundamentally right. And this curious word here, dikaiosune, it's translated both justice and righteousness. And we think of justice as what we do out there, social involvement, and we think of righteousness is about piety and prayer and personal and our spiritual lives. But actually it's the same word. Justice and righteousness hold together in Amos and Hosea and the Old Testament prophets, and therefore in the gospel record as well. Okay. So it's not surprising
that the Archbishop of York there, and the rabbi and various other faith leaders walk, this is during the Lambeth Conference 18 months ago, they walk down Whitehall carrying this banner, and every one of them holding a Bible produced by the Bible Society, and it's called the Justice and Peace Bible. And in that Bible, I've got a copy, I should have brought it with me. All the texts to do with, have you? Yeah, all the ones to do with texts to do with justice or peace are highlighted. And there's a lot of text there that is highlighted. And they were carrying, you can see Rowan and one or two of the others holding that Bible there. Okay. It's important because when things are off the front page, when things are out of the headlines, when things are no longer the first item on the news, we need to remember and pray for, as we shall later today, those who are affected by what's going on in the world. Pakistan, over 1.5 million people are in danger of their lives still, because of the aftermath of the floods. I mean, that's just a colossal number of people. Okay. The Christian gospel asks us to hold the thread, as it were, of life for people. To help people weave a life that is fundamentally good for them. And it's in our DNA as Methodists to do this. Wesley went around on horseback and preaching gospels, messages, but he also wrote a book on medicine. He also opens orphanages and schools, and opened his churches, few buildings they had. Opened the churches so that women could come in and knit and weave, and they didn't have to sell their bodies as prostitutes. They could earn from the work they did in the church to feed their children and themselves. Now this is really key to our background. Okay. So pastoral care, community involvement, justice, and of course attention to worship. Do you know, I think that in Methodist service, Methodist homes, I mean places where Methodists live, I don't mean the Methodist homes for the aged. But in Methodist homes, on a Sunday morning, there's a conversation like this over, you know, a bit of toast and the muesli with bits in. Somebody says, "Who is it today?" And they reach over and you get the plan and you go down and along and you say, "Oh no. Is that fella Mellor today?" You know? And actually we get this notion in lots of nonconformity that the preacher is the performer. The congregation is the audience. And God somehow, bless him, is some kind of catalyst to enable the process to take place. But that's not how it is. You are the performers in worship. We together are the worshippers. The preacher, the worship leader, the organist, the choir, we are just catalysts, enablers of the worship. And God is the audience. We come together to be together in the presence of God. And therefore to bring our prayers. Liturgy is the work of the people. It's together that we bring this offering. And a real sharing together of our lives, of our hopes. We speak about our failings in our confession. We think about those things for which we're ashamed.
But we also bring our hopes and our vision, and we place them before God in our prayers of intercession. And we hear his word, and we ask the fundamental question, what does it mean to me? Lord, what are you saying to me? Of course, in all of that, we draw on the rich treasury of hymnody and prayers and all that God has brought to his people across the years. Okay. It isn't just in communion when we break bread. It's the breaking of the word. It's the offering of the prayers. It's the gathering of the people and their worship. Okay. And of course, fundamental to our healthy church is prayer. It's really curious, isn't it, that actually that which has held the church together for centuries, its prayers, is something that we don't do very much of in the life of our contemporary church. Prayer, personal prayer as a being with God. Prayer that is helped by our prayer handbook. And the prayers that are there, rich prayers. Or there's a thing called Lectio Divina, excuse me, which is divine reading. Just letting the Bible speak for itself. And maybe one of the things that we should do in this 400th anniversary of the Authorized Version of the Bible is to say to one another, let us deliberately read the scriptures in such a way that together we can do that. You can read Mark's Gospel in about 45 minutes. That's hardly a train journey to London. You could certainly read many of the epistles and the prophets in that time. And maybe we need to think about how we set aside time to hear the scriptures in that kind of way. Praying together, praying in small groups or triplets, praying with breakfast is always a good way to pray. Prayer walks around our community, and using that prayer, personal prayer, but also corporate prayer, as a fundamental part of what we are. It seems to me that that leads to a healthy church. Okay. If there is a God, and if that God has come to us in Jesus Christ, and if by his life, death, and resurrection, he has opened a way for us and for our salvation. If those things are true, and if the church is the people of God, then we need to be talking to him. We need to be hearing from him. We need to be following him. Okay. We need collaborative leadership. Working with people, evoking gifts, enabling people, empowering people, using all the gifts of the Spirit that there are. And of course you can find a list in Romans and Corinthians and Ephesians, but in a way there's hundreds of gifts, many of them being used in this act of worship today, technical, musical, reading, in all kinds of ways. I think in the church we have not allowed our leaders to lead in a courageous and prophetic way. Church says it's democratic, but actually it's not. It's just committee-led, which is different to democratic. And it does need to be reflective. It does need to be accountable, but we also need leaders to lead and to prophetically lead the life of our church. Okay. Congratulations, Minister. Your leadership training was so successful, we don't need you any longer. Well, actually, everything I know about leadership training is the more you do it, the more you need to do it, and the more openings that there are coming. Okay. How about this one? It's only too true, isn't it? Come on. Okay, moving on quickly. And of course, intentional evangelism. I mean, if it is true, this message about Jesus, if it really is true, then why do we keep it? Ah, of course, the reformers, they told us to keep the faith. Yeah, the trouble is we hide it. We put it in the fridge. Well, actually, it needs to be there on the counter. It needs to be in our lives. It needs to be... And of course, if you come to a community like this during the week, and I could say, could you tell me where is the church? And people would point to the building, wouldn't they? But they'd be more exact, more correct to say to me, you see the queue in the butchers? That lady there, she's the church. You see the teacher at the school, you see the midwife around the corner, you see the person walking down the street, you see the guy there as a mechanic, you see the person in the office. That's the church. And it's about taking that gospel as you are going. If you read the end of Matthew's gospel, chapter 28, verse 19 and 20, you find there that it begins, well, it begins in the authorized version, go ye into all the world, yeah? But actually, it's a much better to translate it as you are going, disciple the people. That sense of, as we are living our lives, share that gospel. It's good news. It's euangelion. It's good news. And we need to be able to share that in our lives. It's quite interesting. I said I'd catch the 7:05 train from Winchester. I do that because there's always a seat on it. Enjoy it. I stand in the same queue. Many of you, I guess, you might be commuters or have been, and I go to the same point on the platform, I stand in the same queue, and I catch the end door of the 9th carriage. Okay? It's all very sad, I know, but I do. Well, of course, I've got to know the people in the queue. There's James and Jeff and Julia and Sarah and all the rest, Andrew and all the rest of them, and actually a couple have joined us, and I don't know their names yet, but I will. And if I've been doing that for 18 months, and when they first asked me, so what do you do, Howard? If I'd said, because I don't wear this on a Monday morning, is that all right? So it would be a bit of a giveaway, wouldn't it, really? So if I'd said to them, well, actually, I'm a Methodist minister, they'd have put me in the box marked Methodist minister, wouldn't they? It would be grey in colour and a bit dusty and all the rest of it. Well, you know. So, but if I'd said to them, as I have said to other people, well, actually, I work in the charity sector. Oh, really? Yes, yes, it's an international charity. We're in around 190 countries. And in this country, we have about 5,000, just under 5,500 outlets. And we employ just over 2,000 professionals. And we've got nearly 300,000 volunteers. Oh, really? So what are you doing? Well, we're involved in personal and community transformation. And we're dealing with education, with young people. We're at the forefront of dealing with children who are in difficulty. We have old people's work and homes. We deal with medical care, both in this country and fundamentally in other parts of the world. We're involved in the campaign for justice and fair trade. We're involved at The Hague. We're involved in Geneva. We're involved in the United Nations. We're involved in engaging with members of parliament and so on and so forth. And they go, wow, what is this charity? Well, it's called the Methodist Church. It has 70 million members around the world. It is one of the largest churches in the world, with the exception of the Roman Catholic Church and the Greek Orthodox. We need to take that message of Jesus with great confidence in our lives and into the public space. So now in my queue, we have very interesting conversations. They decided this week, one of them said to me, oh, I've found a job for you, Howard. Oh, really? Yeah, well, the Bishop of Winchester's retiring. So we then have this glorious conversation about whether or not I'd be fit to be the Bishop of Winchester. They were unanimous that I'd do a good job. I wasn't so sure. But we decided in the end that I couldn't do it because I couldn't, the pointy hat wouldn't fit. Though they did say that actually they could design a baseball cap with a pointy peak. How do you know what I mean? So actually the sharing of faith has become fun. The sharing of faith has become real, in terms of what they say to me and what I say to them. Now, next page. We also need those big events. And the next three slides are from a thing called the Winchester Passion, which took place at Easter in 2008. That one, just go back a minute. That one is Jesus walking down the high street in Winchester. Jesus was played by a man called Israel Oyelamide, originally from Nigeria. And he played a black Jesus. Okay, next slide. By the courts, the Crown Courts of Winchester, we played out the scenes of Jesus before the Sanhedrin and Herod and so forth. The next one. We had the dancing girls from the university, Salome and friends, dancing before Herod. Next one. Jesus was crucified at the front of the cathedral. Okay. And 12,000 people came to watch. We need to find those ways of sharing personally, but also doing those public things to bring the Christian gospel into that public space. Okay? The fragile light of the gospel has always been one generation away from extinction. Always. It's up to us to shine that light in our lives and together and with other Christians in our communities. Okay. So here are these seven themes. Okay. Just keep rolling. Which I think are a kind of matrix or lens to place against the life of a church, and to ask ourselves, and to do this at a church anniversary service, to ask ourselves, how do we do? Every church is going to say about a list like that, there are some things we do really well. There are some things we're not so good at. And you can reflect on how you feel about that. One of the things we need to get hold of. Thank you. I will just go to the next slide. Oh yeah. Is that if we could get hold of those in a deepening way, then you'd never know what might flourish and grow in the life of our church. Okay? Let's suppose for a minute that the text from Haggai is a prophecy for you. I mean, I didn't know what scriptures to bring today, so I read the lectionary, and it just felt to me like that was a word to you. The splendour of this house will be greater than of the former days. And how do we take those vulnerable things and ensure them in the life of our church? Let me just tell you one story and then I'm done. I said to you that we lived in Croydon for, in fact, 7 years. And during the course of that time, by East Croydon Station, they built a Holiday Inn. Now, excuse me, but why would anyone go on holiday to East Croydon? Anyway, that was beside the point. They prepared for this, and of course they had to dig out the soft earth to be able to put the foundations in, and they had a huge, it was a big site, and they had a huge vehicles and implements and so forth, one of which was driven by a man called Paddy Murphy. He discovered in the soft earth beside the railway track a metallic object. He stopped his vehicle, he got a pick and a shovel, and he began to move the earth from this metallic object. He discovered it was quite big. He discovered it was pointed at one end. As he moved the earth, he discovered, moreover, there were fins at the other end. But undaunted, he was a big fella. He managed to get hold of this cylindrical object and carried it across the building site. Okay? Now, you know how building sites, they have these temporary buildings, they put them on top, one top of the other, yeah? Steps up the side, okay? The managing director, you know, the site manager, he's in the top one, yeah? Okay, so he goes up these steps with this object, in through the door with some difficulty, and he put it down on the site manager's desk with the immortal words, "Look what I've found, God." The centre of Croydon came to a standstill for quite a long time while the police, the ambulance, the fire brigade, the army and the bomb squad all turned up to deal with this object. You see, he did not understand the power he held and cradled in his arms. And I think that we as Christian people in the 21st century need to regain an understanding of the enormous power for personal and social transformation that there is in the Christian message. It is changing our lives. It can change the lives of others and of our community. Amen.